I was so brave for playing this tournament, I remember. And then they had a chessboard, but the chessboard had no notation. It was one of these, you know, just the boards. And I really remember how panicked I felt, and I started crying.
How is your Chinese?
Oh, it's horrible. I remember when I moved to Sweden, she put me into a Chinese school on Saturdays, and everyone there had parents from China. I was the only person that had no connection to China, and everyone spoke Chinese, and I could barely speak. And then I think I cried then again.
What were your chess goals at the time when you were young or when you were going through your school years?
I wanted to be a grandmaster.
You're a grandmaster, your husband is a grandmaster, and your brother is also an international master, right?
Ooh.
So you come from a big chess family. Do you think that, like, there's some genetic component, like, also for Anna, that there's, like, some innate talent that you pass on?
All right, boom, here we go. Another C-Squared podcast episode. I think this is the first time we're having guests live on the show in a very long time. Probably it must have been at least a year since we've had guests.
A year even?
I think so.
It has been a while, yeah. But I didn't realize it was a year.
But here we go. The greatest mother-daughter duo in chess, Anna and Pia Kramling. Anna, Pia, welcome to the show. Welcome to the C-Squared podcast.
Thank you so much. I'm honored that we're your first guests in a year.
I know. We generally don't do this. We've been kind of gotten used to just doing it online. But we couldn't pass on the opportunity to have you guys live on your U.S. tour.
Thank you so much.
How's the tour going?
It's going so well. It's a lot of fun. I got all my flights to Miami canceled. I was going to start in Miami, but then I ended up going to New York instead. And then, yeah, I hate domestic flying in the U.S. I am very sorry. But yeah, so we ended up in New York, which was a lot of fun. And then we went to Charlotte after that. And now we're here and we're on our way right now to Utah. So we're continuing our tour.
What's the idea behind the tour? Like, how did you guys come up with the idea?
Well, I just think that chess is a beautiful game to connect with people. And the U.S. is a huge country, and it's also a really big chess country. A big portion of my audience is from the U.S. So I just thought, how cool would it be to meet my audience and literally go from the East Coast to the West Coast, travel to a bunch of cities, and try to see where can people play chess? If you're an amateur, what's the best place for you to play chess in? And just discover a bunch of different places. So yeah, that was the idea behind the tour. And then I decided last minute to bring my mom as well, because I thought, why not do this with my mother the first time I do it?
Pia, when's the last time you've been to the US?
And I was actually 2 years ago with Anna, a week. But then I've been here 7 days for just 2 days when we played Olympiad in Buenos Aires. The way back, we just stopped 2 days in New York. And then I was here 85 to play the New York Open. So I'm very happy.
In 1985, you played I noticed that you can't really hustle the people in Washington Square Park anymore because they all know who you are now.
I'm so sad about it. You know, I did everything. Fabi, did you see when we put the sunglasses and
yeah,
the hat?
Yeah, and it didn't work.
Would you have recognized her?
I think so.
Obviously, yes.
We should have gone a bit further. But the worst part is that this one chess hustler, he was like, Anna, come in here. Come. And then he was like, where's your mom? And I was like, yeah, she's right there. And he was like, she's your mom? I would never recognize her. And I was like, why did I tell him? We literally had it right there. Yeah, so I kind of failed that. That was my fault. But all the other ones just instantly recognized her. She's become too famous, yeah.
Was this the first time you played the Hustlers in New York?
No, actually, the second time.
Second time.
2 years ago, I
also
played some of them. That is why.
So that's why they know you probably.
They know me. And the first one he said, we actually played before. So he recognized me. And he remembered the games too. So
the thing is also that I'm sure that there's not that many. I mean, yeah, you're really recognizable. There's not really that many super strong 50, 60-year-old women, unfortunately. So I think that they remember that, you know, when someone comes in and she's Swedish and all this, yeah.
Fabi, do you think they recognize you if you try to hustle them?
Well, a few years ago and they were like, you look familiar, but they didn't know quite who I was.
Fabi, I'm going to make you undercover. I'm going to give you a hat and I'm going to give you sunglasses. That should be our next video. And then we go there, nobody's going to know who you are, I'm sure.
Hat and sunglasses, you think that's
hat
enough?
Hat and sunglasses, yeah. Maybe get a mustache as well. And then you can say that you're Fabio from Italy.
usually when they do it for like some other things, they do like a full face mask and like some really, really elaborate disguises. Maybe that's what you guys need as well.
A whole face mask.
But you need to be strategic about it. You need to lose the first couple of games.
So that is the thing.
You have to throw them off. Yes. You lose the first few and then you start like destroying them.
Mom, why did we not do that?
I don't like losing.
Even if it's not real. But Mom, you would always let me win when I was a kid.
Yeah.
So you didn't lose against me.
I lost against you. I lost against you quite a lot of times.
On purpose.
Could you play well?
This is a lie.
What's the story? How did you start playing chess? Because you guys are a family full of chess players, right? Two grandmasters, field master. Tell us a bit about how you started playing chess. So I'm curious about that. And maybe both of your perspectives.
So I don't have a lot of memories of when I was really young. But I know that I was always going to chess tournaments. Even when I was like 1, 2, 3 years old, I was always going to chess tournaments. I think at one point I was trying to eat all the chess pieces. And then my parents were like, you don't eat them, you play with them. And then they taught me how to play chess. I don't know if that's true, but I think that's how it went. And then I remember my first tournament being when I was 5 years old. So, but I think for me, chess was just so natural because I was always in chess environment. So I would see my parents sitting there and moving the pieces. And I'd be like, what is that? What's going on? I want to do the same thing. You want to do the same thing as the people around you. So I really clearly remember my first tournament. I was 5 years old. It was in Gibraltar. The Gibraltar Open, the amateur section. And I was so brave for playing this tournament, I remember. And then they had a chessboard, but the chessboard had no notation. It was one of these, you know, just the boards. And I really remember how panicked I felt. And I started crying because I just felt like I'm never going to be able to write the score sheet. And I was so stressed about this. So I just started crying and I was saying, I can't do this. I don't want to play chess. This is so horrible. And then the arbiter actually gave me my own board that had all the notations so that I could find B4 and I could write all of this. And then I was really happy. So I was walking around with my chess board. I was the only person in the tournament that had this.
So about 5. About five when you started like traveling tournaments and stuff.
Well, I was traveling to tournaments since I was 3 months
old.
But
not playing in them.
But not playing them. Yeah, yeah.
I do have a memory when I was also very young. I think it was in 2005 maybe. It was in it was on an island. I think we were playing, and I think you were also playing.
Where was that?
In Kavia.
In the Olympiad, but it's 2005.
No, not the Olympiad. There was a tournament after in 2005.
Yeah, 2005
or 2006 maybe.
Yeah, I think 2006.
An open tournament.
Yeah.
And you were carrying Anna at the time. It was like at a buffet.
Yeah,
and
I know.
That was like the first time we met, although you don't remember it for sure.
Yeah,
and I think I was probably like 13 or 12 years old at the time.
Yeah.
It was, that was a while back now. Yeah.
Did you always plan on having her be involved in the chess world? Or
yes, I really wanted.
You wanted her to be a chess player?
Because chess is so important for both Juan and me. It's our life. And I also believe so much in chess, the thing you get from it. It's just a way of training yourself. But you also get a lot of friends. You will always have friends for life and you get to travel. So I see so many positive things with chess, but inside my heart, I also wanted her to become a champion. So it was all of these things, but I felt if I put a little bit of pressure, it was a boomerang. And she said, no. So I had to encourage her, but it had to come from her heart. It had to come from her inside. But every time she said, she was training chess, she was playing online on this Magnus tool. And I was so happy every time she was so positive with chess. But I couldn't put any pressure on it.
No, I didn't like being told what to do.
Right. How did you handle those moments when she starts crying, competing, and maybe losing occasionally and starts crying?
Yeah.
How did you feel about those moments?
Yeah, actually, it was very good when she lost because I really wanted her never to cry. I've been crying so much myself for lots of games I lost. And I thought that was very important. Not, you know, just to put it away and keep on going and not crying. And actually, she didn't cry because she lost. She cried for other reasons, but not because she lost.
Why did I cry?
The score sheet, now these things. No, Anna was very, very good with that. And when I saw her, and she was fine, she was very good. I thought she would be at least 2,500, no problem. So, but of course, you have to be consistent. But also at the same time, I wanted Anna to do lots of things.
Yes.
Because my life has been very much chess.
Yes.
I have loved it, but I wanted Anna to see to do lots of different things.
It's dangerous,
things.
Right, to do just chess.
Yeah, it's dangerous. You know, but you open up your mind and life becomes very beautiful. So every time Anna wanted to do different other hobbies. She was dancing flamenco. She made theater. She played the guitar. She was taking lessons in Chinese. So she did a lot of different things. And I believe very much in that. But it was a little bit like I wanted Anna to be the best in everything. So
was this her initiative or your initiative? You were like pushing her towards all of this.
I was asking her, but she had to make the choice. I would never force her to do anything she didn't want to.
Mom, the Chinese was your initiative.
it was my initiative, but you said yes. Because it was in your spare time at school. It was at school, so it was easier.
How is your Chinese?
Oh, it's horrible. I remember when I moved to Sweden, she put me into Chinese school on Saturdays. And everyone there had parents from China. I was the only person that had no connection to China. And everyone spoke Chinese and they could barely speak. And then I think I cried then again. I was like, I can't be here. Like, this is not for me. And then I quit. Yeah, then my mom let me quit.
Yeah, it lasted one day. Yeah. So it was true. Of course, I let you quit.
Yes. Well,
that's very interesting. That's very interesting. Did you go to school also? Or were you mostly just traveling with your parents, playing tournaments? Or did you go in school as well after that?
No, I was going to school.
You went to school,
I was
right?
quite academic when I was young. So... my schools were always basically
like... So that's
like,
why probably you're not 2,500.
That's exactly. I should have dropped out of school, then maybe I would have been 2,500. No, so my teachers were always telling me that as long as I get good grades, it doesn't matter how long I'm gone. I just need to get good grades. So yeah, I was always doing school. I really remember going to tournaments with the biggest backpacks. It was so heavy with all my school books and I had to do a lot of homework at the same time. So that was a bit annoying, I remember, you know, because I was only caring about the chess and then I had to read about all the Swedish kings and do all kinds of homework that I didn't care about at the time. But yeah, and then I finished high school, but I never went to university.
What were your chess goals at the time when you were young or when you were going through your school years?
I wanted to be a grandmaster. So when I was definitely, I think from the age of 13 to 17, I really wanted to be a grandmaster. And I think I really thought that I would quite easily be able to get 2,300, 2,400 back then. Because, yeah, when I was 16, I was like 2,175. And then I went back up to 2,150 several times. And so my goal was just to get 2,200. And then I just thought, easy way up. But then I took a different path in life.
And that was about 2019, 2020, when... the whole shebang with the streaming started and COVID, obviously, which impacted pretty much everybody. Did you decide at that particular moment, you know what, streaming seems to be working very well for me. This is my path right now.
So I had a couple of really bad tournaments in 2019. And I remember that I just went, I'm going to quit chess for 3 months because I traveled so much. I think 1 year, 2018, I played 125 classical games.
So you were really serious about it.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, at the same time as being in high school, 125 games. That is almost playing a classical chess game every 3 days. So I was really serious about it. I had more games that year than my mom, I remember. It was so, and I was doing a lot of training and I really enjoyed it. But then in 2019, I had a couple of bad tournaments and I thought, okay, I'll take a 3 month break. And at the time, they told me that they didn't know who was going to commentate Rilton, which is the biggest chess open in Sweden. And so they randomly asked me, hey, Anna, do you want to commentate with a grandmaster? And I was 17 and I was like, I've never done commentating. And my mom was very negative about this. She's like, Anna, why would you commentate when you can play? Right?
Commentary was not such a big deal back then.
No, in 2019, no. And so I just thought, okay, I'll try it. Because I was of the idea that I never know what something is going to take me to. So I was a very like yes person to these things. And I thought the more annoying I find it at the time, the more I should say yes, because that just takes me out of my comfort zone. So I decided to say yes to that. And we weren't getting a lot of viewers, to be honest. But then after that, Danny Rensch contacted me and he was like, hey, Anna, you could be a chess commentator. And I was like, oh, really? This is cool. Like, you know, this really big person from chess.com is contacted. I was a nobody. And so... apparently someone dropped out of commentating the Women's World Chess Championship match and they asked me, hey, do you want to commentate that? It starts in 2 days and it's going to be at 6 a.m. every day of your time. And I'm also going to high school at the time. Do you want to do it? And I was like, I have to say yes. It's too cool of an opportunity to say no, but I don't want to wake up at 5 every day and then go to school. And I didn't know where to do it and all these things, but I decided to say yes. And then after that, it all started. I opened up my Twitch channel and then I started streaming it.
Did you enjoy the commentary when you were doing it?
I enjoy streaming more than doing commentary, if I'm going to be honest. Yeah, it was fun, but I did think sometimes that the games were very long, and we were just talking about variations back then. It wasn't stories. It was me asking, hey, what move should you play here? And then I felt it went a bit slow. I would do it differently today, for sure. Don't watch those old. I was not good.
But it sounded like a familiar story, because I was also asked by Danny to commentate the World Championship two years after the Women's World Championship that you did.
Yeah.
And I also woke up at like some obscenely early time, and I was like, why am I doing this? Why am I putting myself through this? But the actual commentary can be quite fun, especially if you have like a good, you know, chemistry with your host.
Yeah, I think me and my mom did it a few times. And, you know, I was sitting in this basement at 6 a.m. I was so tired. There was this one time I remember I was really falling asleep. And my mom was like, Anna, you look so tired. And it was just, yeah, it was so early and I was going to school. But you know how it feels then, Fabi. It was...
I didn't have to go to school after. So
no,
That was a bit of a perk.
I remember asking my teacher, I was like, please, I have this huge opportunity. Let me come later into school. I'm commentating the World Championship. And he had no idea what was going on. But he said yes, actually. So he was very nice.
Was this your last year of high school?
No, this was my second year.
Second year of high school.
We have 3 years in Sweden. So we start when we're 16 and we end when we're 19. So
did you quit after that? After starting commentary, did you quit high school?
No,
or did you finish it?
I finished it.
You finished it.
I was very academic in high school, too. Because I had big plans of getting into this really difficult university and I had to get top grades for that. And I was so sure I was going to go. And I used to always say that I'm going to be the first person in my family to go to university, because both of my parents did not to pursue chess. And my mom was so proud.
Actually, what was your reaction at that point when she had so many opportunities, so many ways she could go about?
Yeah.
What did you advise her?
I wanted her to go to university.
University, yeah.
You know, the normal path, especially when we live in Sweden. And but she said she will have one gap year, and everyone in Sweden takes a gap year, so that was nothing strange with that. But then it was the second gap year, and some takes the second gap year, but when it came to the third gap year, I understood there would not be so much time for the university.
When did you realize that this was her thing, like she's going to continue in chess, not as a player but as a streamer and commentator?
I think it was like maybe after some gap years, absolutely. But it also, because I've been very narrow with chess, I only saw that you can be a chess player.
Right.
I didn't see all other things you can do with chess. So Anna really has opened up my mind also.
Yes.
And when I can see the love she has for, you know, speaking about chess with all her audience, I'm just so very happy that I'm referring her way in chess, and that there are lots of different ways. We just have to find the one we like, we enjoy. And so I'm just very, very happy for that. But it took some years, and it was, like in the beginning, I couldn't understand it because I only knew one in chess.
I feel that was the case for a lot of people. It was for me for a long time. And then obviously 2019, 2020, when everything started booming, that's kind of the moment when everybody realized there's so many opportunities, so many career paths in chess. When did you realize that that's the case? Because you did commentary, but it was kind of a one and done type of thing. And then...
Yeah, I did the commentary. And at the time, Levy... asked me to do like some sort of interview or something, and at the time I wasn't really doing content or anything, so I wasn't interested in doing anything like that, and I didn't also really know who Levy was at the time so much. And then like a year later, he was the biggest YouTube name.
Yeah.
And and then I started to see that there's all these like other possible things in chess besides just playing. But I view myself as a chess player, so I didn't like delve too much into other aspects. But it is very interesting how so many other things besides just chess playing and chess commentary, which was traditionally another thing, but now there's making videos, making entertainment courses, and all these other things that are a bit different.
Can I ask, how did that make you feel? Because, you know, you've spent same for my mom, I guess, but yeah, I guess you're from a bit of a newer generation. How did it feel for you to have spent so much time mastering chess and really becoming the absolute top of your game, and then seeing so many people like working with chess in a different way? Like, did you like it? Did it feel strange? How was it for you?
There were some mixed feelings sometimes.
Yeah.
I didn't mind, you know, like let's say some player who's quite good at chess, but not a professional player, and then goes into content creation. I think that's good. like some of the things, for example, PogChamps, I was always a bit like, is this, are we in chess anymore or what are we looking at now? So there were some mixed feelings there as well. But overall, I viewed it positively. It's not exactly how I would approach it. Like, you know, sometimes some videos are a bit clickbaity and I feel like it strays a bit too much outside of chess. But overall, I view it positively.
How's the dynamic between the two of you? You were kind of against her doing commentary at the beginning. You realized that that's a thing at some point. How did you get accustomed to that transition?
I saw the love she had for it. And I remember after the first time when she had comment in real time, I think I asked you, would you have preferred to play?
You were playing in that one.
No, I didn't play.
You were not playing.
Because I played a Rapid and Blitz, so it's a clash. So I guess I was playing the Rapid and Blitz that year too, I think. So yes, I was away. So no, I didn't play. But I asked her, and I could say, and she said she just loved it. And she laughed. Yeah, you said you loved to comment. You were very happy with that. So you were very happy that you comment instead of playing that year. Maybe also because you had some tough tournaments before. And so it's just, it didn't go directly, but slowly it opened up my mind. So I'm just slowly got used to it. And I'm just so happy that I find her way in chess, because as I told you before, I do believe in chess. That it's such a good tool for lots of things, a way to meet people, lots of different things, and not find her way, her own path. And so, I'm just very, very happy for that.
And I think this is what you're doing an amazing job at bridging the gap between, you know, the regular chess content that used to be, you know, very professional and whatnot, and the more accessible one. And you've been including your mom as well in your chess content strategy, I guess. You've been doing commentary on some of your games. Do you feel any extra pressure whenever Anna is watching you?
It's very nervous to comment on Anna's games, of course, because it's when I feel most.
So I guess you're doing it both. Yeah, sometimes
both ways,
you're playing. Yeah, yeah.
So mostly she does it on me. I've done it, I think I did it for Norway chess. I haven't done it too much the other way. Do you feel any stress when I commentate your games?
No, not at all. Because when I'm playing with my bubble, I have no idea.
You control it.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah. So no, I have no idea what's happening around.
But you're stressed when I am the one controlling the piece.
Yeah, sometimes. Yeah, I guess sometimes with the time. But it's just in the opening. When we get into the game, I get a little bit more calm. So, but I do love to comment on Anna's games. It's just so nice.
Yeah.
Maybe it's more nervous when you're sitting on my side and when we are playing the team. And I can see a little bit of your game in the opening.
Yeah.
And then, so. Yeah. But it's, I'm just happy. So happy for
me. Yeah, for me as a coach, it's much more nerve-wracking whenever I'm not playing. Whenever I'm watching my students play. Especially right now that you have access to the engines.
Yeah.
So you basically know exactly what's happening.
Yeah.
And you see every single minimal mistake that's happening on the board. And you're like, oh, how could you play that? You know, now he's winning or he's losing. You know? Exactly. And then everything changes, of course, because they're not playing engines, right? Exactly. They're just humans playing each other.
Yeah.
Such a strange dynamic as a coach.
And that's as a viewer as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because it's so easy to just go, how could this person ever do this? This is such a wrong move. Do they not realize this is the wrong move?
Yes.
Yeah. Did you find that very stressful during Norway chess when you were commentating, especially because there was also Armageddon, which is a pretty stressful format?
I think I get more stressed with my mom than she gets with me, to be honest. I was so stressed. Because also I know how much it means for her. I mean, when I play chess, of course, like it means a lot, but it's not, I think, to the same level because I have other things as well. And so in the past, you know, I connected a lot more my feelings and like almost my worth to like how my chess was doing. Whereas now I feel like, okay, even if my chess goes badly, I still have many other things. But yeah, I know that for my mom, it means so much. So I want to see her happy. So it like breaks my heart when I see, like when she loses and she gets sad, it like really breaks my heart. So I was really, really, truly nervous in all of those games. Yeah.
I'm actually quite curious, how do you deal with comments? And that's a question for both of you, because like we said, anybody knows exactly what the best move is nowadays just by looking at the engine, even players, people that have no idea what chess is about. And then they make all sorts of comments. How do you, mean comments in general, how do you deal with that?
you know.
But really, you don't watch. You don't read that.
I don't watch too much the chat. Also, you know, I'm very.
You should
know,
not have.
Another generation, so I'm not very quick with these things. So no, so I don't. If there, I don't see them in comments. Yes.
My mom. I feel like even when you see them, you just laugh at them. You're like, look at what the stupid thing this person said. Like, she's way better at dealing with that than I am. I'm like, wow, is this really true? Am I like this? And my mom is just laughing at it. And I'm like, Mom, you're like my inspiration with that. So I think she's a lot more healthy with that than I am. I've definitely had moments, I think especially in the past, where it's hit me and I've been like sad. But then at one point I was talking to Andrea Botas about this, and she was like, Ina, do you not just block people that annoy you? And I was like, you can do that? That feels mean. And then I just started sometimes like, you know what? I have the power to just remove this if I want. Like, this doesn't have to affect me. I'm not going to do it. But like, I have the power. So why should these people have power over me? And then that dynamic in my brain changed. I realized that I was in charge of everything. But yeah, I mean, I think there's always people that really want to put you down. And I think the more things that you do that are changing things, maybe, the more also people want to criticize it or because it's new to them. So yeah, I think, yeah, I've gotten a big share of bad comments, but I also have a bigger share of good comments, and I try to read those more than the bad ones.
I think that's a great idea. Yeah. How do you deal with that?
Well, because obviously I can't look at the internet anymore. Like, the bigger, I don't know if it's the internet in general that's gotten worse, or maybe I just notice it in chess, because it grows, and then you have the positive, but you have also more negative, and you kind of can focus more on the negative, right? Because it stands out more. Yeah. And so I just don't look at it anymore, because it gets a bit oppressive at some point.
Yeah.
Just how many negative comments there can be. And yeah, I mean, you're also right that it's like a lot of it is just very stupid, and it's possible to laugh at it, but if it can be difficult also to have that perspective, right? You know, where you just are, where you rise above it can be quite difficult, I think. But you must deal with it much more, because you have more of an online presence, and then like you make videos where you have all like 1,000 comments, right? And maybe 90% are good, but there's always that 10%, right? That are quite difficult.
Yeah. Does it, because I guess for you, it's more just people that are really bad at chess going, why wouldn't he do this move? Is that like mostly the comments that you get that are bad?
Well, it can take like many forms. But yeah, I think part of it is because engines got so strong. And I even noticed this, like, in my own perspective. You know, I looked back on some, like, annotations from 10 years ago, or even longer than that. And I saw, like, you know, top players or myself were saying things that look like nonsense now, because I turn on the engine and it says, like, you know, a completely different thing. And I'm just thinking, like, what was I thinking then? And then I realized that, like, our analytical capabilities are so much greater now, that we view things in a different way. Like, back then we might have viewed a game where there was like some massive mistake in a much more positive light, because we didn't realize it was a massive mistake in 1 second. Maybe it took us like 2 hours to realize. And that was just like, click the button, and then you're like, what kind of idiot am I? It's like the realization is just too instant.
Yeah.
Because engines got too strong. And then for the general public, this is like, you know, multitudes, it's multiplied much more so, because before they wouldn't realize whatsoever, because they don't have they're not grandmasters, for example, or title players. And now it's like instantly, I know the truth, right?
Exactly.
But it affects, I think, all levels. You know, it also affects really strong players. So I have to put all in perspective a bit as well.
Actually, I'm curious about this. How do you think kids should look at chess? Should they look with engines included, or should they try to shy away from that? Or as a coach, should you?
I think this is way more a question for Pia, because I've never done coaching.
Yeah, yeah.
I think actually when you have played your games, you should look at them without any computer. Yeah, of course. The first thing you do is to look at it without. You remember your own ideas, what you feared, everything you saw. You can make some notes. And then afterwards, later on, you can look with a computer, but absolutely not the first, because then the computer will tell you everything, and you need to work on the games yourself.
Do you still believe in analyzing over the board? So let's say your student finishes their game, and then they come back to the hotel room. Do you still believe in like looking at it over the board instead of just, hey, go analyze your game on the computer?
Okay, I don't know. It's, you can use whatever, but as long as you don't switch on the...
No engine.
No engine, yeah. But whatever you prefer. I like the board, but it's because I'm brought up with using the chess.
I prefer the board too. I visualize it so much better on the board. I can't have the same thoughts I had on the board on a 2D board somehow. I don't know. So for me, that's the best kind of training.
That's interesting because I feel like most of the kids nowadays are just, okay, they go back, they see the tablet or the phone or whatever, and they just start inputting whatever analysis they have, turn on the engine, and then that's it. Voila. They give it to their chess coach. But I feel there's something to just analyzing purely over the board, purely with your mind, and trying to transcribe, I guess, your thoughts. Like, hey, what did I think during the game? And I feel there's some value still in that. A lot of people have different ideas.
What do you do, Fabi? How do you do it?
I'm interested. Now I'm mostly on the computer. Yeah. But it was more like board work. And I think it's actually two different things. Like here's visualization on the computer on a 2D board is useful for that. But it's not useful for your visualization in an over-the-board game.
Yeah.
So if you want to train for like over-the-board chess, then using the board is useful. If you want to train for like online chess, then playing online is useful.
Yeah.
I think it's kind of two different types of visualization, which can have some crossover, but not exactly the same. But I would also be like more your... like traditional camp, like maybe training over the board is more useful, but maybe it's also just like maybe both approaches work and we're just used to this one thing for decades and decades, and then the other approach is also not so bad.
But I feel even at the top level nowadays, still the value of the board is there, because whenever we do training, like training camps, let's say, there's always a couple of boards around. There's always sessions when you don't even look at the engine and you try to solve things over the board, right?
Sure.
One of the sides has the engine, let's say, and you're trying to solve it without it. Magnus seems to be doing the same thing, or at least seems to have used to do the same thing. You see all these like images of him analyzing with hammer and whatnot. So there's still some value to the board, even at the highest of levels, it seems like. But yeah, and there has to be a balance.
There has to be
a balance.
For sure.
I'm interested in one thing, because you're a grandmaster, your husband is a grandmaster, and your brother is also an international master, right?
Ooh.
So you come from a big chess family. Do you think that, like, there's some genetic component, like, also for Anna, that there's, like, some innate talent that you pass on?
I don't know. I believe so much more in the environment. So I believe more that my brother was my idol, so that's, I want to do everything like he did. So I also started with chess, and I believe that because Anna was brought up in the chess world, she was only 3 months when she was starting to go to different tournaments. So she's only saw this chess life. So I believe more in that. But I think I'm very much a person in chess who calculates my variations. Anna's part is more playing on intuition. And I think Anna is, she's calculating motion. So I think it's more the environment and yeah, and also that she's an academic person, she's a hardworking person. She has also been working very hard with chess too. So I believe more in that than genetic. No, maybe I'm wrong.
Yeah, I'm really curious about that. I really wonder. I actually don't know at all, like, how much do genes take part in it? Does it take any part that is noticeable? Yeah. What do you believe? Do you have an answer to that?
That's a very good question.
I'm a kid too, so it's...
I am having a kid also, so you know, I don't know whether I will be able to implement that strategy. But thinking about Magnus also, he's going to have a kid. Obviously, everybody's expecting to be the next genius Magnus, right? I tend to believe that that's not the case. I don't know a lot of mother-daughter successful examples outside of, obviously, this one season, the Polgar sisters. But that was... like the parent did not know chess as well, was not like a very good player. It was just the system that he implemented, mm-hmm. teach them. So I think it's a system-based situation rather than a genetic-based situation.
Yeah.
At least that's my take. Yeah. So I don't believe in genetics. But speaking of the Polgar sisters, they said that perhaps is better for development of female chess players to play in open events. And what's your take on that? Do you think...
This is the way I have been brought up in Sweden. We hardly have any women tournaments, girl championships. So I always knew that if I want to, I always have to be best among the Swedes, all players, boys and girls. So I always play with the boys. And I think that has helped me. But what happened is, I think Sweden is a very good example of that, that it helped me because I always play with the boys. I always knew that I have to be best among them. But it doesn't help to get lots of women players. And we are a very good example of that. The Nordic countries, Sweden, we are the country with less female players, with maybe less female-friendly chess atmosphere because we don't support women so much. So what you can get, now and then you get a strong female player. We have had other good female players who have won the boy championship under 16, 14, but they all left because it's not such a nice, friendly atmosphere. They don't have so many friends. They feel the pressure. Lots of young players put pressure. I see it very much among women, also surely among boys and men. So I believe that you have to have high goals. And I believe you have to play among the best. But for encourage girls and women, you also have to have tournaments where the girls are a big number. And you can have a mixed tournament, but it's so much more difficult to make a mixed tournament where the girls are at least 30% or 40%, 50%. That's why we make these all girls or all women tournaments. So we need to make double chances. But if your goals are only there, you will not be stronger than that. But if you have goals up there, you will be stronger.
That's the thing. How do you maintain that balance, right? The mindset balance of, hey, I want to be 2,700, but now if I'm like 2,600, I'm the top rated female player in the world. Like, how do you maintain that balance to still have high goals, but also understand that?
Yeah, but of course, when I was a kid, I told myself, if I not will be 2,600, why should I play chess? And I only go to 2,550. So I was quite disappointed in one way. But at some moment, I realized this is my top. I can be one of the best women in the world, but I cannot reach higher. And I love to play chess. So I will just keep on going. In Sweden, the best, I was number 3. I was never higher than that. So in some moment, I had... I was very, very ambitious as young, and then I had to put a little bit lower. I had to be realistic, but I could keep on going and do what I really love to do.
What's your take on this, Anna? How do you think we should approach women chess players in general and their path to success?
I agree with what my mom was saying. I think there's a lot of people online that are just saying the whole problem is that there's women's titles and there's women's tournaments and that doesn't inspire women. But I think those people have just never been to an actual chess tournament because they don't see how it is to have 300 players and maybe 10 of them being women. Because I know growing up, I went to so many open tournaments. I basically only played open tournaments apart from the European youth tournaments that were divided into an open section and a women's section. I played in the women's section. But in all of those tournaments, I remember that I felt very kind of, I was unique, right? I was a woman, there's 300 men over here. There's maybe 10 women, 2 of them are in my family. In many of those environments, it's very kind of this boy environment. All the guys are hanging out and it's very and so for me, that was fine. And I got some guy friends, but I can also see a situation where maybe a girl feels left out. She's not part of these kind of boy groups. And then she doesn't have a lot of friends. And then what's the point for her to play chess? Chess is a very social game. Chess tournaments last for sometimes over a week. Are you going to go alone, travel alone to a place in an environment you don't feel welcome in? Why would you? There's many things you can do in life. There's a lot of pressure to... Then you feel a lot of pressure to making that worth it because many times it's not even that fun. The environment you're in is not fun. So you have to really perform to make it worth it. But then you have all this pressure and that can lead to a lot of stress. And ultimately, that leads to, I think, a lot of women dropping out because there's more things in life you can do than to feel bad. So I think that this approach of it's the problem of women's titles, I think that's missing a huge point the point is not the titles. The point is not, the point right now is the fact that open tournaments are not a good place for women. And that is what needs to be changed. It needs to be, you know, hopefully that, I think in general, if we get a lot more women to enjoy chess and to play chess and to want to compete in chess, we're just going to get a lot more women in general to open tournaments. And when we start seeing, you know, just women being more accepted in these tournaments and maybe seeing 20% of people in those tournaments being women, maybe that will go to 30%, 40%, then we're going to have a whole other conversation. But I think the conversation of removing women's titles in women's tournaments should not be there until open tournaments are great for both men and women. So I don't see the point of so much the point of this of that conversation that I see so many people having, because I think it's missing a huge point in the problem.
What's the way to change an open or any tournament, open tournament, closed tournament, to make it better, more desirable for men, for women to play?
I think in general, I mean, in the past, I think that, there were a lot of cases of women being very sexualized in tournaments, and that women just, were basically like, just felt like there were a lot of men that were looking at these women in a different way, and that, and I think that's gone maybe a bit better, like with time. I think especially post-COVID, like these things are talked about more and it's less like accepted amongst everyone. So I think that has gotten better, but I honestly think it just takes a lot of time. I think it's been many, many, many decades of chess just being a man's game. And I think that it's just going to take a little bit of time to change, to completely change that out of people's brains. But I think right now we're on the path, and I really think that with chess becoming more accessible for everyone, with, I see so many women in these clubs, like really enjoying chess, as long as they don't get freaked out in tournaments and everything is fine, I don't see a reason for them to quit. So I think that the future generations in 10, 20 years, automatically it's going to become a lot better. But I think it's just been so many decades of it being just a man's game. Like up until the year 2000, there were only 6 women that were grandmasters. So we're talking about a very recent change. And I think any change takes just a few decades to completely actually take part in society.
You've been around the chess world for so many decades. How do you see that transition playing out? Do you feel it? Do you feel like that we're moving in the right direction?
Yeah, absolutely. No, it's a big difference. It's a big difference. It's so much better. Sometimes before you had these awkward comments, you know, you play like a woman, it wasn't a compliment. It was nothing positive. But if you play like a man, yeah, this was, you were a good player. So the things are absolutely changing. And I'm just very happy to see that. And I myself, I didn't play so many female tournaments until Anna was born. But when she was born, I always realized there's the European Individual Championship, big open tournaments with only women. And it was just lovely. So actually now when I'm playing, I try to play tournaments where when I go abroad in Sweden, it doesn't work like that. When I'm going abroad, I play tournaments with lots of female players. No, it's absolutely changing. I'm very happy. I'm seeing women, female arbiters. I'm seeing lots of trainers which are female. So we need to have an environment where we have women and men together, but not only as a players, also behind the scenes.
Yeah,
maybe
that's
more organized that are women. So maybe it will make some small changes with the playing hall, but it will look nicer. It will be more female friendly. And I just, so it has to go step by step, but it's so much better. It's a huge difference.
I think you made a very good point, because the people behind the scenes used to be obviously male predominant, right? Coaches were mostly men. Nowadays we start seeing, but still I would say we're not at the level that we probably should be in terms of like female coaches. How do you incentivize that transition? How do you incentivize females to become coaches?
Yeah, I think there has to be more active program of approaching female, maybe players, women connected to the chess world, because I know also in Sweden, we have some young women, when they come into a certain age, they are leaving the chess world because they don't want to compete. They don't see that their results are good enough, but they like the chess family. They like the atmosphere and they would like to stay. But we don't have a special program for female or for young players to try to become, for example, arbiters or something else. And I think it's a good moment to approach these players. It doesn't only have to be the girls, the boys also. Those who are on their way to leave, just to try to keep that, but also so to be more active and with training to become arbiters, to become other things, coaches in chess, and maybe to make it, but you have to make it in a more active way.
I feel specifically coaching is way less developed than everywhere else. Like I see a lot of arbiters that are women. I see a lot of commentators that are women. So it seems like we're moving in the right direction in that regard, but not when it comes to coaching. Like I cannot think of too many women coaches that I can say, that's a coach that has like very good results.
Also in the United States, I think. It's bigger in the United States than in Europe.
It's developing much faster in the US, I think. Yeah.
Because I can think of a lot of women players here who also
Irina Prash,
for example.
Yeah.
But not in Europe or Asia so much that I can think of. Yeah. It seems a bit different.
Probably because coaching is somewhat commercialized
here
in the US. Like you can actually make a very decent living out of being a coach.
Much better than I think in Europe, for instance.
That's
when I've seen the rates, it's a whole different thing.
Yeah.
For the most part.
Yeah. So how do you develop, I guess, that system outside of the US is the question.
Yeah.
And it's a difficult question.
Yeah, it's difficult because what I can see in Sweden, we're having young coaches, female coaches, but it's for the basic level.
Sure.
So, and it's not something they're really making, they can't make a living from it, nothing like that. It's more like a hobby they make as a part time. But it's how Sweden also works. In Sweden, you can't be almost nothing connected with chess. You can't be professional. It's just very difficult. But it's a difficult question how to do that.
I think another really important thing is just the fact that we're getting more and more female role models in chess. I think role models play a huge role because I think it makes it easier for young girls to go, I want to be just like her. I want to be like Beth Harmon in The Queen's Gambit, you know? I can be like her. Like, what's stopping me from becoming like that? I think that, inspiration is really, really important. And I also want to say that when I was talking about previously, like the titles, I think it's definitely a conversation that you can have. Like, I think that top women in chess can have that conversation, like what should be good? You know, would it be good to remove female titles or not? But I think more in general, like when we're talking about bringing in new people, completely new people, I think that's a different story than what is best for actual top level chess players. So I just wanted to clarify that.
No, I think that's a very good point. And obviously, you know, the eliminating women titles, it's something that Judith has occasionally said that maybe it's a good idea. But even her, she's like, we don't really know whether that's a good idea or not. Mm-hmm. Right? It's something that you should keep in mind as an up-and-coming woman chess player, that you shouldn't put any limits. Yeah.
I fully agree with that.
Like, don't put any limits to your ceiling. I don't want to be the number one women's chess player in the world. I want to be at the top of the chess world, right? Which opens up the possibility of you going all the way to like 2800, right? Instead of 2600. It's a big gap. And the question is, how do we make that gap smaller, I guess?
But I think it's also the coaches. They really have to have these high goals because I think lots of time. And this can sometimes, it's very good when, you know, when you have the championship, the girls and boys are playing together, you qualify together. Because sometimes if a girl, she's very strong, she's the best, and she has to play with the girls just to qualify for the European Youth or World, it just makes it worse because she wants to play among the strongest player. So it's always better.
I'm sorry.
Yeah. So sometimes that could be maybe... not so good. But you really, I really like the idea when you're all playing together, but we still need to have the titles. If you take away the female titles, the gap to become an international master is so much higher. So many, it might be lots of players feel that it's too high. I
drop out.
Yeah, you drop out. So we have to go slowly.
Yeah, I always think that what we have now with women's titles is a short-term solution for a very big problem. I think that long-term, it's not the solution. I think long-term, talk about 100 years or I don't know when, just to put a time frame, I don't think that it's objectively the best scenario that we have right now at all. I think the best scenario is everyone just has the same titles. You know, we have a lot of women that play, a lot of men that play, and everyone just has the same titles. But the problem is now that there's just so few women that play. And I think what's been so fascinating for me going around the U.S. has been when I've gone to these chess camps and chess schools, sure, there might be a few more boys, but there's so many girls. It's maybe like 30, 40% girls. You know, we don't see that out in the actual chess world. But when they're kids, they enjoy it the same. They're really good. The girls, they're really good. There's no difference there. But then when they grow up, somehow there becomes the social difference. And that is, I think, the problem, because it's not about the actual chess. They love chess just as much. So I see so many people online saying just, oh, it's just that girls don't enjoy chess. That's like the simple explanation that they put. And I hear this, I think, every day, actually, at some point. And I just go, you just have actually no idea what you're talking about, because I see with my own eyes just how much all these girls love chess. But yeah, later on, something happens and they just don't enjoy the environment that they end up being in.
Yeah. And obviously that's, you know, something that's going to get more talked about, and we're going to start implementing more ideas and systems into it as we move along. It's kind of a new thing, right?
For sure.
And the whole social aspect of it, it's also new, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the mentors, I think you made a very good point with that. Right now, with the emergence of social media, and everybody's more visible. And in this case, a lot of women are more visible as well. So I think it's a good thing. You're moving on to Vegas soon. You're going to Vegas. Are you excited about that? Both of you?
I am. It's my first time. It's the first time my mom comes to one of the freestyle tournaments.
What are you going to do there, P? Are you going to shoot some content? Are you going to play? What's the plan?
I don't know. I'm just following Anna. So I don't know. You know, I don't know so much about the plans. What's going to happen the day after? I hardly know what's going to happen the same day.
I have no idea you're coming on the C-Squared podcast.
So before traveling, I didn't know all the towns where we were going to visit. So I asked, you know, follow manager, she asked me to come out. We're happy here, but you have to ask how.
Have you been to Las Vegas before?
No, I only been to New York before. So this is the first time I go outside New York.
Vegas is fun.
You don't want to go outside in Vegas.
It's also the summer
a little bit.
Mom, we're not going to go to the casinos. No worries.
Okay, I'm very happy for that.
I don't think you can avoid the casinos.
No, I think
you're
the
in a casino. You're in the casino.
Yeah.
What's your plan for Vegas? What are you going to do? Are you going to do some content, some gambling?
So,
what's the plan?
We're going to a couple stops before going to Vegas, so it's not our next stop. But Vegas is going to be a lot of fun. I love going to freestyle tournaments because it's honestly really inspiring for me to be in the same environment as just top chess players. I think it's so cool. I think about it sometimes when I'm walking around, like little like 12-year-old me would be like going crazy that I'm just like being able to shoot content with all these amazing players and trying to understand their minds as well. I think it's so fascinating. Fabi, you're one of them. Yeah. So, we're going to have my mom play Magnus Carlsen.
Okay.
We're going to have her play you, Fabi, as well. You're going to be part of this. There's lots of ideas.
Last time we played was, I think, 2008. Does that sound right?
I think it was 2010 and 11.
2010. Yeah.
10 and 11, I think. Or was it 9 and 10? It's this year.
You guys made a draw, right?
We made a draw. Really,
two draws.
What was the other game?
One was Greenfell, and the other one was it's like Queen's Gambit, and I go Bishop
D5, you
go
H6.
No. I was white in both. I went Bishop D5, you go H6. I took an E3. No, and I played Queen C2 very quickly.
But later you played C5, where I had, like, you played E4, I took on E4, and then you played C5, and you got the structure,
yeah? Yeah, this structure.
I remember. That was quite unpleasant, too.
Yeah, okay, I had this contract,
yeah. The other game I can't remember what...
That was a green foul, and I think you went for my pawn on B2, actually. I think it was one of those lines. And, yeah.
Oh, yes, I do. Yeah,
now
yeah.
Now I remember, yes, yeah. I don't remember, yeah, so no. It was, yeah. And that was, I think that was the shortest out. And that was maybe like 20 something lows. Not so long.
This is truly when I feel like I'm on a whole other level of chess understanding. To be able to recall something, a game from 15 years ago in that.
I've lost that completely.
You agree with me?
Yeah.
I'm not alone here.
Played both times this like Magic tournament, right?
It was in...
Safra or Merida?
Yeah, it's one. Not in Merida. Safra was one in that one. I'm not sure the name of the...
Same region, of Spain.
It was in Extremadura in Spain. And that's the only time I've been there. It's just a very beautiful part of Spain where I know. And from where I really know the taste is from this area.
So you guys can record the trilogy. They made two draws. Who's going to take the trilogy?
Well, yes. Yes, that is true. It's
don't be worried. Don't be worried.
No, it's going to be a lot of fun to have you meet all the top players and play them again.
Yeah,
it's going to be, I'm really excited for Vegas. It's going to be amazing.
Actually, we're having the first female player in Vegas.
We are.
Freestyle.
Yeah.
Bibi Sara is going to be playing there. And how do you see that one playing about?
I think it's going to be really cool to follow. Yeah, I'm excited. I haven't watched a lot of her games, unfortunately, in the past. Yeah, I believe that she's really good.
This guy.
Yeah, I mean, I believe she's really good.
Very good.
I'll be rooting for her. Like, I want her to beat everyone. So, Fabi, I'm sorry. If she played you, I'll be rooting for her. But, it's going to be amazing to follow. And we'll film some content with her, too. So, we're excited.
Cool. Fabi, any more questions? Or do you think we...
One last question.
Yeah.
Yes. Is that you've played for... so many decades now.
Yeah.
When you're playing a top tournament like Norway Chess, for example, do you still feel the same type of pressure and same emotions when you're winning or losing, or is it kind of subdued after so much experience?
Yeah, no, I guess, of course, I hate losing, but I'm calmer now. I'm not so young any longer. So I would have felt more when I was younger. So it of course, it's still very important, but it was more important before. And actually, this is what happened when I became a mother. I got, before chess was always number one, but when Anna came, she was, of course, number one. So I got, and that is actually the reason why I started to make better results in final tournament after I became a mother than I did before. Also, not only that, also that I was not among the top three any longer, but, and of course, then also with the age. So it's not, it's not that bad when I lose now, and it happens much more.
No, Mom, don't say that.
Okay. I have to be able to cope with it.
I think that's the best way to cap it off.
Uh-huh.
Thank you very much, guys, for joining us, and enjoy the rest of the U.S. tour.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having us here.
Thank you.